There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome John Fassman, the U.S. digital editor for The Economist magazine, taking us into the world of the future cuisine. This is imagining 100 years from now, and what will be on the dinner table? What will people talk about? What will they go to fast food or high-end restaurants to consume? And there's a special language here, thinking out loud. We are the Anthropocene. That's the period that geologists think of us, mankind shaping the environment. And the Anthropocene diet right now is filled with meats and milk products and chicken and a variety of protein sources. But that's not the future, if I read correctly. John, congratulations and a very good evening to you. Looking at the shelves right now, some of them are empty because we're recovering from the pandemic. Others of them are filled with red meats and chickens, rich countries especially. We're eating more meat than ever. However, there are visionaries who see that both as unnecessary and also contravening the ambition for climate change because of the consumption of water, energy, the demands on fossil fuel manufacturing, for example, and also I think the herds of cows cause problems. So this thinking that's encapsulated in your essays, is this rare? Is this marginal? Is this the Economist's smarty pants? Or is this now a common conversation around the world? Good evening to you, John.
Good evening, John. Thank you for having me. I think that it is a conversation happening around the world increasingly, even if it has not yet filtered down to the supermarkets. I'm very glad you used the word Anthropocene because that's how I thought of this article. What is the Anthropocene diet? Well, I think it's characterized in rich countries by two things. The first is an unimaginable variety. As I read in the piece, if you walk into the supermarket in any rich city in the world, you will have fish from Norway. You'll have fruit from India and Mexico. You'll have lamb from New Zealand. You'll have choices that were unimaginable to our parents or parents or grandparents. The other feature, though, is that it externalizes the cost of all this choice. We can have meat at any meal we want it because it's cheap, and it is cheap because it is produced with unimaginable cruelty to the animals, with environmental costs that someone else pays, rearing cattle just emits a tremendous amount of greenhouse gases. To have all the fruits and vegetables we want, they grow on fertilized fields, not just fruits and vegetables, but bread as well, wheat, soy, corn. All of our farming is done with fertilizers, which cause fertilizer runoff and create a massive dead zones in the oceans closest to our shores. And all of these costs are things that somebody else pays. We don't pay for them at the cash register. And so the thinking that I wrote about in this series is how will we provide delicious green food to a planet whose appetite for meat and for fine things is only growing? It's easy to say we should all be vegans, and perhaps we should, but that isn't going to happen. So given human appetites and how they're increasing, what are the technological innovations that could make our food system cleaner, greener, but still delicious?
A moment about philosophy. John makes it very clear in the course of his reporting, this is not about religious people. This is about choices that you make at the supermarket or what's for dinner, Mom. We need some definitions, John. What is a flexitarian?
A flexitarian is, it's what I am, among other things. It's people who do not completely eschew animal products, but who, when there is an alternative, will choose that alternative. It's basically mostly plant-based.
All right. What is a locavore?
Someone who eats foods or tries to eat food grown close to where he or she lives to avoid the harms caused by food miles, by, by bringing food around the world to you.
This is the science fiction part. Great fun. Insects, yeah. A source of protein. Seaweed, a source of protein. Is that happening now, John? Is this already something in another part of the world that will come our way?
Well, you have to remember, it's happening now, but it has been happening for a while. About 2 billion people in the world regularly eat insects as part of their diet. And the question is, how do you make those insects? And the reason they do it are a number of things. It is cheap. It's almost, insects are pretty ubiquitous. The reason that we should all be eating more insects is that they're extremely rich in protein. Raising them does not cause any greenhouse gas emissions. They're efficient, meaning the body weight to protein is extremely tight. They're mostly protein. And given the costs that other forms of protein, other meats incur, insects are a very benign form of protein. But getting people to eat them, I'm a reasonably adventurous eater myself, and I'm kind of disgusted by the idea of eating bugs, but I'm also embarrassed by that. Getting people to eat them is going to be a challenge.
Well, the logic here, I puzzle sometimes. Birds eat insects.
Yes.
We eat birds.
Yes.
Therefore, we eat insects. We're talking about a food chain and eliminating cruelty, although I could see getting to the point of thinking that treating insects as food could be cruel, but we're talking about rearranging our understanding of our sources of protein and making it cheaper. John, is cost part of this calculation?
Cost is one of the biggest parts of this calculation. Incumbent meats, that is the chicken and hamburgers and steaks that we buy at the supermarket, are extremely cheap, especially in the United States. That's because they are produced with tremendous, you know, they're produced efficiently, but cruelly. The trick is going to be to get these alternative sources of protein off the ground and have them compete with a food system that has grown up to produce this very cheap meat. That's going to be very hard. That will take some time.
Also, chemical additives. It's possible when you're well-to-do to avoid food that will last forever, you know, beyond the apocalypse, somewhere around the death of our sun. However, that is a major concern, I think, for all the moms in America. Can we eliminate the additives in food by choosing other diets? Or will the additives show up again in insects or in some of these other foods we're about to discuss?
I think it's almost inevitable that if you want to have insects, for instance, that are broadly consumed, they are going to eventually take the form of familiar food, right? You will eventually have, you know, cricket chips that are made the same way, you know, chips are now, with a lot of additive flavorings, a lot of binders to put them together. You can, if you choose, I think, choose a, you know, plant-based whole food diet in which you're very attentive to not eating processed foods, to keeping additives to a minimum. But I just think if the idea is to produce greener food for the masses, you're going to have to meet the masses where they are, and people eat a lot of processed food.
Beyond Meat and Impossible Food, two firms that I've read about approaching now a world beyond the Anthropocene diet of the early 21st century. These are vegans, but there's an important turn here. We're talking about products that do not require cows or products that do not require cattle. What is milk without a cow? Where does that come from, John?
It can come from a number of different sources. And this is not new. It seems new because we have noticed, you know, on our grocery shelves, oat milk, soy milk, rice milk, hemp milk, almond milk, macadamia nut milk. But the idea to do this is quite old. Henry Ford was a big proponent of plant-based milks. His reasoning was that the cow's milk we drink is the product of a cow consuming plants and then organizing those nutrients in a certain way that is recognizable as milk. Well, what if we just eliminate the cow? We can assemble that same mixture of amino acids and sugars and other minerals and fats, and we can do that from a variety of different sources. So for whatever reason, that has become extremely popular recently. You know, most of the world, including myself, can't digest milk, and so the proliferation of these plant-based milks has been really a boon to us.
Yes, when you go into a Starbucks or a Pret, you can ask for skim milk, and they don't have it. So they go, what else do you have? And You name all those, I don't know. They're a long list of things that aren't milk, and they're commonplace now. That's beyond milk. But the other part of cows is beef without a cow. What does that look like?
In the case of Beyond and Impossible, what that looks like is protein isolated from legumes. I believe Beyond uses peas, and I believe Impossible uses soy. The legumes themselves are milled, and then the protein is isolated into a very fine white powder, and it's mixed with binders and fats and flavorings into a burger shape or a sausage shape or increasingly a chicken shape. And these are extraordinarily realistic replications of burgers and sausages and chickens. I eat them. They're expensive, so I don't eat them as often as I'd like, but I eat them often. They are delicious. They're not, they're not exactly health foods, but the foods that they're replacing, burgers and fried chicken and sausages, aren't exactly health foods either. So if you accept that it's more or less a wash on the nutrition front, and it sort of is in terms of protein and saturated fats and salts, the products that Beyond and Impossible and other plant-based protein companies offer is a wash in nutrition, but is far more beneficial both environmentally and I would argue morally, because it avoids the cruelty of animal slaughter and factory farming.
Yes, it's a puzzle too about chicken. I see that there are people thinking about chicken that's not chicken, realistic chicken. But before we get into the creativity that's underway, and you use a comparison that is apt here. This is Silicon Valley in the 1970s. I can remember looking at that Apple II that I think Dick Cavett was promoting at the time. I'm old enough to remember Dick Cavett, John. And I thought, and now I look back and I thought, what a fool I was not to see that was the future.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it's Silicon Valley in the 70s because the person who told me that said, look, everyone is sort of working on this problem. It's very buzzy. You know, there's a lot of ferment. There's a lot of money pouring into this space. There are a lot of people who are going to lose their shirts. We don't exactly know where the future is going to come from among these, you know, hundreds of startups, but it's going to come from somewhere. Like, we can see what's coming. It's the sort of same sense that people must have had when they began working on the personal computer in the 70s. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like, and there are all sorts of computers that were available in the 70s and 80s that aren't today. But the future came out of that ferment, and I think that's the point we're at now when it comes to clean green food.
We're weeks from COP26, the meeting in Glasgow, Scotland, about climate change. When we come back, these new foods, the Anthropocene diet of the future from John Fassman of The Economist magazine. And what does it mean about the climate, about consumption, about greenhouse gases? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.